This is
Stan Z Perspectives.
Welcome to another episode of STEM's Perspective. Today, we have the privilege of hosting a remarkable guest speaker whose passion for physics is as inspiring as his journey in the world of literature. Joining our discussion on science popularization and communication is the young and dynamic author, Arpan Dey. Arpan has made a huge mark on the literary and scientific landscape, evident in his exclusive interviews, articles, and published book, Our Physics So Far. His insightful discussions on STEM topics has been featured in renowned publications such as the Literature Times and Global Indian. His founding of the Journal of Young Physicists further showcases his expertise in this area. As a published author, well-educated individual, and outspoken advocate for the sciences, Arpan Dey promises to bring a unique perspective to our podcast today. So, welcome, Arpan.
Yeah, it feels great to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, great. So, let's get right into it. I want to go back to before you started your journal, before you got your book published, before all these interviews. What got you into all of this?
I was a curious individual from the very beginning, which I guess holds true for the most of us, although the system and the surroundings that matter, so that in many individuals this curiosity is not led to develop naturally. So I was mainly interested in consciousness, and I was always bewildered by the human consciousness, and it's a great mystery, how we are conscious, from where this sentience, this experience of the world, this qualia, from where this is coming, because this is nothing similar to the things we so far study in physical sciences. So I was really entangled by this mystery. This really caught my attention. And then I started studying a bit of neuroscience and tried to explore consciousness from a biological perspective. But then I sort of realized that maybe consciousness is not just about, not just a biological issue. If I really wanted to understand this at a deeper level and understand of the fundamental nature of reality, which again is a very big goal, but I thought this has to do with the complexity and how complex systems behave, a system with a lot of interacting parts, an extremely complex system. And when I started studying about complex systems, I realized that all this comes down to physics. So at that point, I realized that to do this, I have to have some basic knowledge in physics. And then I started, exploring physics, reading popular science books on physics. That's how I started. And then I sort of slowly upgraded my level and I made use of a lot of online resources and took mm-hmm. some courses. And my teachers were also really helpful on this regard. My school teachers, high school teachers, and So my main interest in physics shifted to quantum mechanics, which again is not directly related to consciousness. Although there are some theories about quantum mechanics and consciousness, but that's not proved yet, and there are a lot of objections. So I didn't shift to quantum mechanics because of consciousness, but I just found it interesting and inspiring how this theory revolutionized the way of physics and the way it was developed and all. So then I started writing some notes on quantum mechanics, and I soon like it it turned out like I converted it in, into a kind of, you can say, a guidebook on quantum mechanics. I don't want to use the term a textbook, but it was a bit technical, so it was not a popular science book as well. So then I thought that maybe I should, start publishing my works, and I wrote a couple of research articles, and that's when I started looking for online platforms for young students, and that's mm-hmm. how it all started. That's how it all started, basically.
Okay, so when you said that you were studying a complex system, was that complex systems in the human body or just in nature?
In nature in general, but human body is obviously an example, but yeah.
Mm-hmm, of course. And then you said you took a lot of courses online. What did you, was it Coursera? Did you use Coursera for those?
I used Coursera, obviously, but not in the beginning. In the beginning, I didn't take official courses or certificate courses. I just kind of visited university websites and watched a lot of YouTube mm-hmm. videos from good, reliable sources. Just for learning, but not most of them were not certified courses, initially.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then what did you do? what did you do first? So, like, you got interested in physics, and then you started looking for online resources to, like, get yourself familiar with it. Then what did you do after that? What did you do after that? So, like, was it straight into the Young Scientist Journal? Did you join that right away?
Kind of. Like, I submitted my research article, my first research article. It was an article on establishing certain mathematical relations between isotopic elements and the number of quarks, the up and down quarks that were present in the nuclei. So I thought my findings were original because I couldn't find it anywhere on the internet. But although I realized that they were of limited practical applications, which is why like many major journals refused to publish it. And another factor was, of course, my age. Like I was 15 at that time. So then I found the YSJ, and I really thought that like this was specifically meant for students of our age. And I thought it was a great platform to, and it does a great deal to encourage the scientific participation of young students. And then I submitted my article, and it was accepted for publication. And I really liked the review process. I learned a lot about how this reviewing is done of scientific articles. And then I submitted a couple more articles. And then I I was just randomly checking out the website of the YSJ, the Teams page and all. And then I thought like, yeah, I'm eligible to join, so why not? So I initially joined as an outreach member, like some 3 years back, more than 3 years actually. And then I was I shifted to the editorial team as a junior physics editor, and then I was appointed as a senior physics editor, the role I'm continuing to this day.
Oh, so would you say that this role in the YSJ like was kind of like a mentor experience for you for when you started your own journal?
Definitely, definitely. Like it was not just when I started my own journal, it was a like invaluable experience for me in general, because like I learned a lot about writing scientific articles and reviewing them, and like how they're written, how the review process is done. And I learned a lot of technical knowledge also, like the kind of articles I edited in physics and astrophysics or mathematics, whatever. So yeah, definitely.
So with your own journal, how did you start that? When did you get the feeling of like, okay, I want to start my own article? My own journal, sorry.
Yeah, definitely. So what I felt was that my journal is the JYP, the Journal of Young Physicists. So it's specifically on physics. It specifically publishes article on physics or like related topics. But the thing is that what I found was that there were a couple of good journals, like the YSJ, for instance, which publishes articles on all scientific disciplines. But physics was, I felt, a bit underrepresented, especially for the youth. And although it's called the JYP, it's not like a scientific journal like that. It's more of a blogging site, or maybe you can say, yeah, a kind of blogging site would be a good word, a good description. So the main aim of JYP is that young students can publish can get the science articles, physics articles rather, reviewed and published for free. And we do this in a very reliable way. Although it's of course it's free of cost, but we try to maintain a high standard of the articles we publish, and of course the other aim is to popularize physics, because a lot of people read our articles nowadays, although this was not the case from the beginning, but now we have created a platform, sort of like nothing too great, but still we have improved a bit like from when we started. So I think that's our main aim. Like if you see on our website, it's written like it's committed to popularizing physics and fostering the growth of young physicists. So those are the two main objectives of the JYP.
Yeah, so I noted this down while you were speaking. You said getting youth interested in physics. But I feel like for youth to get into STEM, they have to either have this like innate curiosity like you, or be surrounded by other people who are interested in STEM. So would you say that you had people in your life that were interested in the sciences, or did you get into it by yourself?
I would say for my case, it would mostly be like I got into it by myself, because most of the people around me, they're not STEM people. In the sense, my father, for instance, is an economics graduate, and he's an economics teacher as well. But yeah, the interest in physics and like initially consciousness and then physics, that came by my own. But I would like to mention that I received immense help and support from the people around me. Like they although they probably didn't have technical knowledge about my interest, but they really encouraged me and helped me in all the way that they could. So that's a great, like, without them I wouldn't be where I am today, like that is for sure.
Yeah, so like your parents, did they show support in what your interests were?
Yeah, definitely. They've always been like non-conventional and supportive of my interests. Like that's one thing. Yeah.
Okay. So let's move on and talk about your joining of the New York Academy of Sciences. You're an ex-member, correct?
Yeah.
So what was that like? What is that? Can you explain that for the listeners who don't know?
Yeah, so like I joined the Junior Academy of the NYAS, and like it's basically a STEM program for high school students where they are put in groups from like maybe a group of 5 to 6 students from different countries around the world, and they are given some challenging real life STEM problems to solve. So I think the most important part of my experience at the NYAS was not the research project or technical and skills and knowledge I gained. But it was that I collaborated with a lot of people from around the world, and that really improved my collaboration skills, my communication skills, and it gave me a feeling of what it is like to work in a team. And I think this experience would be invaluable. Although in the NYAS, for instance, one thing I'd like to mention is that the options, at least if this was the case when I was a young member, the options available were very limited. Mostly there were almost no programs which were directly on physics or on the topics I was interested. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was overall a very great experience for me, definitely.
So how long were you a member?
For about 2 years, yeah.
2 years, okay. So what would you say you learned from that? Just working, like, I know you worked on a team, you improved your communication. What else did you learn?
I worked on two projects. One is on telemedicine and the other is on vaccine distribution. At that time, due to this COVID pandemic, these were like pressing issues. And so as part of my work, I had to do some study on this, this medicine and logistics and this stuff, which may not be directly related to physics. But the thing is that while doing my study, I came to realize that this patterns which we see in physics, like in chaos theory, for instance, just a simple example. I realized that these patterns, some patterns are like kind of fundamental and they appear everywhere, even in much less fundamental sciences. The pattern, for instance, of the, like in economics, when you try to model the stock market, the rise and fall of stocks, and for instance, then the same pattern appears in the way the galaxies are structured, for instance. So this realization was very crucial. I started to think that maybe there is a fundamental theory, a theory of everything, which we call, rather, although that's a very broad term, so I should be careful with while using that. So I thought maybe the same kind of laws apply at all the scales, from the cosmic scale to the subatomic scale and even deeper. So this led me to the question that I'm working on right now, and that's probably one of the biggest question, crucial question in complexity physics. So the thing is that, so whether the same kind of laws apply at all scales, which we call kind of weak emergence, because when we explain emergent phenomena, emergent stuff, so these things are emergent, but they're just weak emergent in the sense we have formulated new laws of us so that we can study the complex systems in a much more convenient way. Because it's not possible practically to calculate or simulate a complex system in computers or do that manually. So, but the thing is that according to weak emergence, basically the same kind of laws apply at all scales, and there's probably a fundamental theory of the universe. But again, this is in stark contrast to some other theories like the strong emergence. So, and all this relates to, this downward causation, upward causation, and all this. I believe all this information would be crucial for anyone who's trying to understand consciousness or just complex systems in general. So that was one of the most important effects I had from my experience in the NYAS.
So your experiences are they're all contributing to your understanding of what you're doing right now with physics, right?
Kind of. Like, I like to think of it like that. Or I try to kind of find connections, rather.
So are you still focused? Are you mainly focused on physics? Or are you still trying to find the answer to exploring consciousness right now?
That's a very difficult question. I ask myself that question almost every day, and I have no definite answer. Of course, I want to focus on the big questions of consciousness and the fundamental nature of reality. But that's not practical, for instance. Now I am an adult, so I have to think about my future and my financial security and everything. From that, I think I'm compelled to focus more on, practical physics and more on the areas of physics where there is enough funding and enough opportunities to land myself a job. But if you say what I want to do, that's obviously the second option. And I personally think that, although many people might not agree, but I personally think that a full understanding of consciousness will be beneficial to almost all the sciences. And that's not what I'm working for, not for the benefit, but I think that information will be it will give me extreme mental satisfaction, and not just to me, to a few other individuals as well. And I think this is a question that ultimately comes down to physics. That's what I believe anyway. So it's ultimately I'm doing physics kind of. That's what I think anyway.
Okay. So now let's talk about the American Physical Society. I've never heard of this before. Are you a member?
Yeah, I recently joined in 2023.
So what does this organization do?
So they are basically an organization which they keep you updated on the latest findings in physics. There are various channels on you can join the channels of your interest. There are a lot of subtopics under physics, and then there are a couple of interesting webinars that you can attend. They host a lot of webinars almost on a weekly basis on a lot of interesting topics. And then you get to know of the opportunities. And then the most important part is that you get to connect with fellow physicists from around the world, even more even professors or PhD holders. APS is a huge network. There are members like me who are just undergraduate students. And there are also official physicists who have done their PhD or even maybe postdocs or who are maybe even professors.
So have you personally made any connections that you think are fruit bearing? Do you think they will grow into something useful in the future for you from this organization?
From APS, I have not yet met someone like that. Not yet. But of course, I've met many people like that, but not from APS. Not yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the future, do you see yourself meeting these famous scientists, scientists that you've interviewed before?
Of course, I wish to meet them. I would like to meet them, but I don't know how things will turn out to be, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's kind of a great segue into the next topic I wanted to talk about. The scientists and physicists that you've interviewed, Edward Witten, Paul Hallgren. How did those go?
Can I be more specific about your question?
Was it interesting interviewing them, getting their perspective?
Definitely. When I interviewed Professor Witten, I was much younger. So now it seems that the questions I asked, some of them were a bit naive maybe. But the recent interviews I took of Professor Halpern and, John Horgan. And so they turned out to be quite interesting. I really learned a lot. And I also had a discussion, off-screen discussion with these people. And that was definitely interesting.
Did you kind of find them inspiring in any regards? Did they motivate you to dig deeper into physics?
Definitely. This can be said in the case of Edward Witten. And in the case of Halpern, I got to know about him after I read his book, Einstein's Dash and Schrodinger's Cat. And John Horgan, I didn't know of him initially. So I wouldn't say he inspired me to dive into the field of physics, but I find him an interesting character because the thing I love about him is that he's kind of outspoken, and his hypothesis about the end of science is it has really sparked a lot of controversy. But after reading his arguments, I feel that it's not just for the sake of controversy. Like what he says, it's perfectly logical. Like, I mean, at least it has some kind of logic. So that's when I decided, like, maybe I should talk to this guy. I should at least reach out to him on email and request an interview. And thankfully, he agreed. So, yeah.
Is that how you got these interviews? Just cold email, or not cold email, but reaching out through email and asking them to interview them?
Yeah, in the case of Professor Horgan and Professor Wheaton, but for the other two cases, like Paul Halpern and Leonard Lordina, I kind of connected with them randomly. Maybe they read some of my articles and reacted to some of my posts, or I reacted to their posts and they took notice. And so it was a long connection. And then I randomly requested for the interview. But for these two cases, I kind of emailed them directly.
So where are these interviews available? Are they on your YouTube?
No, they're available on the JYP, and the Edward Witten interview is published in the YSJ Young Scientist Journal website itself. Like, it's mostly an email interview, so I didn't record it or anything, so not on YouTube.
Okay. So what kind of content do you post on your YouTube? Because I've come across it and I've watched a couple of your videos.
Yeah,
I just wanted to say, for the listeners, describe what you do on your YouTube.
Thank you. So on YouTube, I don't post any I don't post regularly or any particular type of content. It's more of a whenever I feel recording a video, I just do it. I have made some playlists, and if you follow my playlists on physics and on the there is a playlist called The Big Question. So in those playlists, I try to publish valuable content, and I try to share my opinions on these big questions. And there are a couple of other interesting videos on aviation and as well, but the main thing is that I just kind of try to share my opinions on STEM. The same thing you can get on my LinkedIn, for instance, or where I post, or on my articles, maybe.
So would you say it's mainly just for fun? Or is there a purpose behind it? Are you trying to spread your love for knowledge? Are you trying to teach others? Or is it just I feel like doing this, so why not? I'll do it.
No. It's obviously there's a purpose. I'm doing this because I feel there's a purpose. But yeah, in the case of YouTube specifically, I don't take it very seriously, as many of my listeners have also pointed this out. But otherwise, the articles I write and all of that, I try to do it for a purpose. I really want to spread knowledge, because I feel the youth should get interested in the topic, because the more people get interested and the more of them will work on the problem, that's really going to increase the chances of someone coming up with a solution by a great amount. Yep.
So
I think everyone should have a chance, at least everyone should have an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So for students that are looking to get into STEM, what would you say their first steps are if they have access to all the stuff that you had? What would you say they should do?
High school students, are you talking about?
Yeah, high school students. Yeah. High school students.
It depends. The first thing is that maybe they should start with reading popular science books, which at the point which I've always insisted, because textbooks, I've met a lot of people who just try to figure out whether physics is for them, and they started reading these advanced textbooks from maybe 14, 15 years age, and that kind of killed their interest, which is kind of obvious. So I think, moreover, most of these textbooks, which are followed at the undergraduate level, they are outdated and they don't take the recent discoveries into account, which is not the case with pop sci books. So I think if you read popular science books, and nowadays we have the internet, so if you watch the good content, there are a lot of content on YouTube and a lot of articles science websites like Quanta Magazine, and that's the name that comes to your mind. There are many others. So then you can figure out what kind of work is actually going on in the field right now, and would I be interested in doing this? And if you feel it's your cup of tea, then obviously you have to put in some hard work and dedication, and then you have to train yourself in the conventional way, because if you don't know the basics, then obviously you'll not be able to work on the advanced theories. But I think it's a good idea to start from the popular science, just start from the basic, the interesting stuff, layman terms, rather than just focusing on just jumping onto textbooks.
So I wanted to ask you, when you were a high school, because as high school students, you have a bunch of high school competitions that are available for you to sign up for, at least here in America. Did you have anything like that as a high schooler? Did you submit anything that you were interested in? in a competition?
Like in India, like such opportunities are very rare actually, and like maybe there are some opportunities, but I didn't know of them. And like there really is this culture is lacking. Like when you like you get this, you know, like you are informed about this from your school or your institute, this culture is lacking. And so the thing is that after I joined the YSJ, I kind of I made a lot of international connections, and that's how I came to know about this NYAS or the other organizations I'm a part of, for instance. Mm-hmm. So before that, I would say no, I didn't get any such, I didn't know of any such opportunities actually.
Okay. So now let's talk about your future. What are your plans for the future? What are you going to do now?
So right now I'm pursuing an undergraduate degree in physics, and after this, obviously, I would like to pursue a master's, and then maybe a PhD if things turn out as planned. And then mm-hmm. I would like to like move on to research in physics. Like ideally, I would like to research complex systems and maybe their implications on their wider implications, like maybe quantum gravity and all. But again, like that's what I would like to do ideally. But I don't know. Like,
what would you say are some of the roadblocks that you think might come in your way?
When you say roadblockers, the main thing is that there is a lot of like, you know, the distribution of funding in the different areas of physics, or I guess this is true for mm-hmm. any STEM field, for instance. That's not equal, and that's the thing is that that's really not based on the scientists really have a little say in these matters. At least that's the case in our country. I don't know about US or other, but it's mainly like when you have some financial the financial ROI or the short term ROI is high, you obviously will get funding in those kind of research projects. Like nobody's going to spend huge amounts of money on quantum gravity right now because that's an abstract topic. But yeah, who knows? Like after 100 years, quantum gravity, there might be a lot of applications of quantum gravity. So yeah, that's the crucial thing. And then there are a lot of other factors, of course, this is a very competitive field, and there are a lot mm-hmm. of inequalities and, you know, biases and all, like you know what I'm talking about. So
yeah. So I had two things I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. Do you have anything else to say?
No. That's all. You can say.
Okay. So I had two things. One, here in America, it's like the same thing. People that go into, let's say, a biology major, their average salaries are much less than those who go into business. It's unfortunate, but it is the reality. And two, you said quantum gravity. What is quantum gravity? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so like quantum gravity is it's basically, I wanted to talk about this actually. Right now in physics, we have two major theories. One is quantum mechanics, or I should say more precisely, quantum field theory. So it describes mm-hmm. The three forces of nature, the weak nuclear, strong nuclear, and the electromagnetic forces. But there are four fundamental forces, as we know, like as of now. The other is gravity. So the problem is that gravity has not been able to like unify gravity into this quantum field theoretic framework for some reason. Like there have been many proposals, but so far we have not been able to unify gravity with the other three forces. And gravity is described by general relativity, Einstein's famous theory of gravitation, but that's mm-hmm. something entirely different. For instance, like let me just mention the two crucial points of difference. GR is background independent, and it's a theory like in which the background, like for instance, the space-time, here by background I mean the space-time, it directly takes part in the theory. And you know, the space-time curvature determines the movement of the mass, or I should say matter energy, and vice versa. But in case of quantum field theory, like basically these forces, the three forces which I talked about, they arise due to the exchange of certain fundamental particles called bosons, and the particles that make up the matter are of course called fermions. So we haven't been able to find such a boson for gravity yet, the hypothetical graviton. Like we don't have any conclusive evidence yet. And so there are a lot of suggestions. Like the main idea is that why should the universe be described by two different theories at two different scales? Like for astronomical phenomena for at huge distances, the general relativity works fine. But when you go down into the quantum subatomic scales, then you need the quantum field theory description. So, but the thing is that in some cases, like maybe in the singularity of a black hole or in the Big Bang, in those cases where the size was extremely small, but the energy was extremely high. So in such cases, you need to take both GR and QFT into account. And for in those cases, like modern physics, like the physics we have today, does not make any sensible prediction. So this leads us to think that maybe there is some a theory of quantum gravity which will explain everything, which will be a kind of the holy grail of physics, the kind of theory of everything or unified field theory or whatever you call it. But again, like some people are skeptical, like whether such a theory exists in the first place, and there are a lot of other hypotheses. But yeah, that's what I mean by quantum gravity in general.
Are you learning all this stuff in college, or is this like independent study?
Of course, independent study. Like I'm learning the basics in college, but not quantum gravity.
So you're learning the basics in college. So would you say you're ahead of all your classmates? You know everything.
No. Like I'm ahead in terms of the concepts and all, but I'm not mathematically. I don't know the mathematics. Like I'm not mathematically trained enough to deal with quantum gravity in a mathematically rigorous manner. That's the point.
Okay, so I also heard that you were looking to maybe tutor some underprivileged kids in the near future.
Yeah.
So do you have any plans for that, or is that just like in the workshop right now?
No, I have some plans for that. Although I must say, I thought I would execute these plans much earlier, but due to this and that, like somehow I was swamped up with other obligations, so I didn't do like. These plans are not reality yet, but yeah, basically, so in my college, there is a scheme called NSS, the National Service Scheme. So basically all the students have to do some social work to get their degree. There is a minimum amount of credit, but so that's what got me thinking. And then I thought that, yeah, maybe I should not just do this just for the sake of credits. And especially in my state of India, West Bengal, there are a lot of underprivileged children. And some people I know, they work for NGOs, and also I visited a village once, and also I'm in the process of making a kind of presentation in our local language to get them interested in science, like very like 6 to 8 years old kids, like the very basics of science. Obviously, I'm trying to inculcate the habit of scientific thinking in them, which is very lacking. I feel it's lacking.
Yeah.
And, that's what I want plan to do anyway.
I really liked your thinking on this social work, because if you're going to do something, it shouldn't be just for school, you know? It should be because you're passionate about it.
Exactly.
I really like that. Yeah. That's why I'm also doing volunteer service at a hospital. There's no requirement for me for my school, right?
Okay.
I just do it because I like helping people. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to ask you, Arpan, was upon reading your articles that you've published, I kind of got the sense that you were interested in metaphysics and philosophy. How would you say that connects to what you're doing with physics?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked the question. So yeah, basically, I've always been interested in metaphysics and philosophy. And when I was young, it seemed appealing because, metaphysics and philosophy, thinking about this stuff, it really doesn't need a lot of mathematics and a lot of rigorous training, scientific training. And like, if you are interested, I guess you can do that. Like for instance, when I was 15, I wrote an article. It's a kind of essay, you can say, titled On the Fundamental Nature of Reality. And so at that time, of course, I didn't read any official metaphysical texts or anything of the sort. But now when I compare it, I find that all these ideas are already published in, like already accepted as ideas in metaphysics, which I came up with on my own when I was 15. So I feel like it's not, once you have that interest, it's thinking about metaphysics and philosophy is kind of appealing, and it's nothing difficult. So that's why maybe I got interested into it. But if you want to do something worthwhile in physics, you need to have a scientific training, a formal scientific training. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that what I realized recently is that metaphysics and philosophy is kind of like I would say it's a kind of trap for physicists, because if you want to discover the fundamental nature of reality, if you want to think about the fundamental nature of reality, that's a very good thing. But the thing is that if you want to do that, I mean, metaphysics and what I feel is that metaphysics and philosophy, they kind of create a world of their own, and then you can explore that world. You're free to explore the world. You can free to explore consequences and everything. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that while thinking about metaphysical problems, you might get some reflections which apply to our reality as well. But I would say that metaphysics and philosophy doesn't converge to the truth, because in science, a truth means an objective truth. And so I would say that if you want to pursue science, if you want to pursue physics or in STEM in general, I would say that that's my suggestion. You shouldn't spend too much time or get too much caught up in metaphysics or philosophy. You can just use the metaphysical ideas and some of the ideas, or at least the thinking processes, the logic in drawing out the wider implications of your theories. But I would say that's why recently check out my recent articles, I always keep physics above metaphysics. That's what I did in the updated edition of my book as well, Our Physics So Far. I corrected this portion from the original edition. So that's something I would like to say to aspiring STEM students or STEM students who would like to pursue STEM, especially physics.
That's interesting advice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's it for us. Do you have anything else to say, Arpan?
No, that's all. It was I would like to say it was really great, and I'm really extremely grateful and thankful to the YSJ. This was the first organization which gave me a real opportunity, and at that time I was only 15. So YSJ, it all started with YSJ, and it feels great to be here on a YSJ podcast today. So thank you.
Arpan, I really like your story, and thank you for interviewing with me.
Yeah, well,
have a great day.